Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case this morning is Omnicare versus United Health Group. Mr. Criswell.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Harvey Kurzweil. May it please the Court. In this case, Omnicare presented ample evidence from which a jury could infer that there was an agreement between United and PacifiCare that PacifiCare would refuse to negotiate with Omnicare, hold out for a reimbursement rate of AWP minus 16. Now, specifically, Omnicare provided evidence of the following per se buyer's conspiracy under Mandeville Farms, which is sufficient to survive summary judgment. The defendants improperly shared specific, highly confidential future pricing information. The trial court referred to it as average or averages. That's not correct. In fact, the specific price was shared. The price that was going to be offered to Omnicare was AWP minus 16. It was clear from the record that PacifiCare was going to hold out for that price and nothing else. During due diligence, United was able to learn that PacifiCare's average drug acquisition cost was significantly lower than United's, and that gave the two companies both motive and opportunity to coordinate their contracting strategies. The strategy they adopted was the stalking horse strategy, in which during the period after the merger agreement was signed but before it closed, PacifiCare would be a stalking horse to obtain a better contract ultimately for the benefit of United.
How is PacifiCare in a position to gain any advantage in its negotiations with United? What in these negotiations or what information was shared that would have allowed them to take advantage of Omnicare?
If I understand the question correctly, the question is, what is PacifiCare's information and what is PacifiCare's motive?
Not so much what is its motive. What power did it have? Where's the collusive conduct that gave it something to coerce Omnicare into reaching this, into giving it such a good deal?
The collusive conduct takes place between United on the one hand and PacifiCare on the other hand. These two companies have agreed to merge. They've agreed to merge at a period in time in which we're on the cusp of going effective with Part D. During this period of time, United had a significant market share, if you will, in the PDP market. United needed to obtain certification and needed to make sure it had a contract with Omnicare because it needed to make sure that it was going to be in a position where somebody could provide the drugs for its patients. PacifiCare was in a very different position. Because they were going to merge, PacifiCare was in a position in which it could adopt a strategy in which it could take a risk that it would never have taken if it were not a merger partner. And here's what I mean, and here's how this played out. The way this worked is as follows. Omnicare had a very large share of the nursing home market. It probably serviced 47 to, in some cases, 80% of the market, depending upon the region. These companies bid for what are called dual eligibles. They were going to provide drugs to people who were on Medicare and Medicaid. United had to have a contract with Omnicare because it couldn't run the risk of not having a contract. It simply had to be in a position in which, as the bigger player, it was going to have a contract. So it signed a contract with Omnicare at the end of July 2005. But because PacifiCare was its merger partner, a jury could infer that Pacific Air was instructed by United to hold out for a better contract.
Well, Pacific Air wasn't the only company negotiating with Omnicare that walked away.
That's true, but here's the significant thing.
How could these others take that risk?
Well, what happened was they all came back. You see, most of the companies signed contracts in one of two periods, either before August 1, 2005, or in the period beginning in October when they were all assigned dual eligibles. And when they were assigned dual eligibles, they realized that because nursing homes have exclusive contracts with PDPs, and because Omnicare had exclusive contracts with nursing homes, what they needed to do was to make sure that they had contracts with Omnicare so that in the nursing homes that Omnicare served, they would be in a position in which they were covered. So literally every company, every PDP, signed a contract within a fairly narrow range. That is to say, Omnicare obtained contracts from every PDP on a national scope where the rate was AWP minus 13 to AWP minus 11,
but this
roughly.
This still doesn't explain, though. If Omnicare is the giant, everybody needs Omnicare. Pacific Care doesn't have Omnicare. They need to reach an agreement with them. Why does Pacific Care basically accept their offer without any negotiation? What pressure could Pacific Care bring on Omnicare?
Pacific Care couldn't bring any pressure on Omnicare. Here's the point. The point is that Pacific Care, when Pacific Care negotiated, Pacific Care negotiated with long-term care pharmacies other than Omnicare. They could never satisfy Pacific Care's needs. And that's because there's still too many nursing homes. But because Pacific Care was going to be acquired by United, Pacific Care could wait until the very end, knowing that it was running no risk. You see, normally in a merger, the acquired company, and we have an expert affidavit from Professor Coates, in a merger, normally the company that's about to be acquired is risk-averse. That is to say, if your company is going to be acquired, you as a manager are not going to do anything to upset the possibility that that merger will not go forward. Here, Pacific Air engaged in extremely risky behavior.
I guess I'm having difficulty understanding how that's so extreme, how it's so risky, how it's so unreasonable if others did the same thing.
Well, nobody did the same thing. That's the point.
They were certified. They got their
certification.
But the
certification is not a franchise. You see, all the certification means is that you can go forward and provide services. But as of January 1, if you could not actually deliver on the commitment, then you would be decertified and somebody else would go in there. Now, there were only three small companies that held out with Omnicare. One had six covered lives, one had zero, one was limited to the state of Michigan. Every other PDP except Pacific Air negotiated a contract within a fairly narrow range. And that the reason why this is striking is that Pacific Air, in a non-collusive world, would have had every incentive to take no risk. Pacific Air would have done what everybody else would have done. That is to say, Pacific Air would have gone forward and signed a contract, negotiated a contract. What's striking here is Pacific Air in a non-collusive world had no contingency plan. That is to say, in the absence of collusion, if Pacific Air were acting on its own, if it had no contract with Omnicare, and if January 1 came and it was unable to deliver, it would have been decertified.
Could not it then have decided we'll contract with Omnicare?
That is a risk that a rational and prudent business person would not take. And the reason why that's a risk that a rational and prudent business person would not take is that who's to say if at that point Omnicare would have any interest in contracting with them? In other words, what they were doing, which only makes sense in the context of a conspiracy, is they were willing to run as long as they could, knowing that United had their back. Because once they knew that they were going to be acquired by United, the reason why the stalking horse strategy works is that there's nothing to lose by it. And when I say nothing to lose by it, the worst that could happen is that Pacific Air runs out the string, doesn't get a contract with Omnicare, can't service the homes, but because it has an agreement with United, United does not invoke what they call the material adverse development clause in the merger agreement. United says, okay, I've got your back, you're covered, you can come in under my contract.
Let's say that had happened. Let's say Omnicare had not caved to Pacific Care,
right,
held fast, mm-hmm, and Pacific Care jumps into the contract that United has with Omnicare. Would there have been a lawsuit? Because now Pacific Care would have been at the same rate that you contracted with United.
Under the United plan, United, once the merger took place, once the merger closed, United could have simply invoked its contractual right to add additional covered lives.
Sure. And my
so
question
would not
is,
have been a lawsuit, in my judgment.
So it wasn't whatever. So the stalking horse wouldn't have worked if Omnicare had, in fact, simply said, "We're not going to agree to these terms."
Absolutely. If Omnicare would have said, because Omnicare thought, and it was told, Omnicare sent an email to United, knowing that United was acquiring Pacificare, on October 17, 2005, and the email said, "Will Pacificare be contracted under the United contract after the merger closes?" United takes 2 weeks to respond to that email, and in that two-week period, three people who had knowledge of the pricing of both companies review the email. The email then says in response that Pacificare will be following its own Part D strategy post-merger. Now, Omnicare interpreted that, and indeed one of the deposition witnesses from United shares the interpretation, as a statement that Pacificare is going to go its own way. At that point, what Omnicare said was, I've got everybody else signed up. It's a rational economic decision to sign the Pacificare contract on Pacificare's terms at this point. I'm just picking up additional revenue. What Omnicare never appreciated and never realized was that this was the stalking horse, because once the merger closed, there's a very obscure provision in the Pacificare contract which refers to adding clients to the Pacificare contract, which you wouldn't know about unless somebody told you. Once the merger closed, United first came up with a pretext that it had legal concerns with the Omnicare contract. That pretext, by the way, was not presented to Omnicare until 2 days after, Pacificare and Omnicare signed its contract, 4 days before Pacificare and Omnicare signed their contract. WHI, which was United's contracting agent in dealing with Omnicare, was told by United, hey, we're going to get out of the Omnicare contract, but keep quiet about it. Don't say anything. Don't say anything to Omnicare. So you have December 2nd. United tells its agent it's getting out of the contract. December 6th, Pacificare and Omnicare sign the contract. December 8th, for the first time, literally the first time, United tells Omnicare, I've got problems with your contract. Now, the reason why you are correct, Your Honor, in stating that this strategy would not have worked if Omnicare had simply refused to sign the Pacificare contract. But the significant point is that Pacificare would not have engaged in this conduct in the absence of an agreement, because a party about to be acquired, it does not become an outlier. A party about to be acquired does not take the position that despite what everybody else in the industry was doing, which was negotiating a contract within a fairly narrow range, what they were doing is they were saying, we're just going to hold out. And the reason why they could hold out is they knew that the company acquiring them had their back. That's the only explanation that makes any sense. We have a regression analysis, which is discussed in the brief. The regression analysis shows that the rate that PacifiCare obtained or gave to Omnicare was sub-competitive. That type of economic evidence is certainly relevant in applying the high fructose test. When you view the conduct in terms of timing, motive, and opportunity, there was enough here under high fructose to get to a jury. The circumstances here are that United signed a contract which it didn't like, but felt it had to sign a contract. It shared extensive pricing information with PacifiCare, including the specific price that PacifiCare was going to hold out for, AWP minus 16.
Isn't that figure under seal?
Well, that's the amazing thing about it. Judge Pallmeyer dismissed the significance of that pricing information on the ground that it was averages and benign. In fact, it's under seal. And the reason why it's under seal...
You're using it.
It's not now.
Yeah, in the oral argument.
Well, I have no... I have no choice. I have no choice. It's in the briefs, too.
It's in the sealed
briefs. In the sealed briefs.
I just don't understand why you seal things and then...
I didn't seal them. And I don't think it should be sealed. I don't think it's worthy of being sealed. The plaintiff sealed it on the ground that it was competitively significant. I don't think it's competitively significant at this point in the litigation, but they certainly are taking a position which is totally inconsistent with the position they're taking here, because Judge Pallmeyer said that in any event, all this pricing information, A, is benign, and what they're doing is they're saying, no, it has to be sealed.
Well, the fact is it was sealed, and now it will be broadcast throughout on the Internet, so that's where we are.
I don't think there was any way to, in response to the questions, to avoid that. And I don't think it's information which, frankly, is worthy of being sealed.
Well, that doesn't make any difference. It was sealed.
You lost that argument in the district.
Well, we never opposed it. We never opposed it. The Stalking Horse memo was dismissed by the trial court on the ground that it was entitled to two interpretations, one interpretation being the interpretation we put forward, and that interpretation was that it described exactly what happened here, that PacifiCare would act as a stalking horse and a decoy. The interpretation that was put forward by the defendants, which was adopted by the court, was that stalking horse was meant to establish a higher standard in the industry. The court said our interpretation was not implausible. That's precisely the sort of fact-finding that trial court should not have done. The economic irrationality of PacifiCare's decision here has to be seen in the context of no contingency plan.
You described this in your brief, I think, as kind of a classic buyer's cartel, the buyers really didn't get together in the sense of saying this is the price we're going to hold out for. In fact, you had United at a much more favorable price. And it seems that you could have entered into a contract, even if you were going to give more favorable terms to PacifiCare, you could have included a provision that would have precluded United from from jumping on that contract. Again, it comes down to why is Omnicare not more careful, not more concerned about the effect of its own contracts here.
I think that by hindsight, that's certainly the case.
Well, and Omnicare was well aware of the merger. This was
absolutely. That's why.
This was not sealed. This was
public information. Omnicare was well aware of the merger, and that's why Omnicare specifically asked United, "Do I need a separate contract with PacifiCare?" In October of 2005. And at that point, Omnicare's response, the response of United was they're going to go their own separate way. The reasonable interpretation of a layperson is, well, they're going to be having their own separate contract. If I want to do business with them, I have to sign that contract.
But wait, a businessman's going to say that even though we're going to give this really favorable contract to the company that's merging with this other one, and we're not going to prevent this. In fact, we're going to say that the others can join in. Anyone, they can add others. That they don't think that that other company would join in that?
Well, there's one part of the question which is not accurate. They didn't say that others could join in. In other words, the United contract would have permitted PacifiCare to join into the United contract. When Omnicare raised the question, Omnicare wanted to find out if that was United's intention. What Omnicare was told in a response was, no, that's not what's going to happen. PacifiCare is going to follow its own separate course. Because PacifiCare was going to follow its own separate course, Omnicare believed that it could sign a contract which was limited to PacifiCare. Now, by hindsight, would Omnicare have put a provision in that contract precluding that? Absolutely. But that's not what happened, and the cases are legion that if there's an antitrust violation, that sort of lack of high diligence is not a bar to recovery. I see that my...
Let me ask a quick question on your state law claims.
Sure.
Does it really matter whether Kentucky or Illinois law...
I don't think it matters at all.
It comes out pretty much the same.
It does.
Okay.
I don't think it matters at all.
Thank you, Mr. Kirby.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Edwards?
May it please the Court, Steve Edwards for United. A question was asked, well, what information did PacifiCare get in the merger discussions that would have given PacifiCare an advantage? And the answer to that question is none. All of the information we're talking about here that was exchanged in the due diligence process flowed from PacifiCare to United, not the other way around. Now, if United had gotten that information and had said, oh, this is great, we're going to go out and try to get AWP minus, the number is out, minus 16 as well, then they might have something. Then they might be able to point to an information exchange and parallel conduct. But they don't have that here, because what happened is United went out and its opening bid was AWP minus 15%, and it ultimately ended up with an agreement with Omnicare that was at AWP minus 12%. And Omnicare liked that agreement. It wants that agreement today. And what happened here is in November of 2005, when the parties rekindled their negotiations, Omnicare asked PacifiCare to send it a contract. PacifiCare sent Omnicare its standard form contract that had the two key provisions in it, the provision about AWP minus 16% for brands and the provision that permitted PacifiCare to add plans to its contract without Omnicare's consent. And Omnicare said, yes, we'll sign the contract. They just signed the contract. There was no counteroffer. There was no negotiation. They just signed it as is. And now they regret having signed it, and they're trying to use the antitrust laws to get out of it. And there is nothing about the scenario that you just heard that suggests, that supports an inference of conspiracy here. The evidence the undisputed facts, I think, are clear, and the inferences that can be drawn from those undisputed facts are as consistent with independent action as they are with conspiracy. The burden is on the plaintiff to come up with evidence that tends to exclude the possibility of independent conduct. They haven't done that here. What they've done is they've strung together four relatively benign events: the due diligence process, the so-called stalking horse memo, the October 31st email, and Pacific Care's negotiating strategy. And they said, aha, from that you can infer a conspiracy. Judge Pallmeyer very carefully analyzed the facts, analyzed every contention that Omnicare made, and said, well, I look at these facts, and I think a reasonable jury looking at these facts could just as easily, if not more easily, interpret them to be consistent with independent action. And Judge Pallmeyer analyzed those facts individually, and she analyzed them as a whole, as she was required to do by high fructose. And she cited the high fructose opinion, and the notion that somehow she ignored high fructose is just without any basis. Now, the Omnicare's counsel repeatedly accuses Judge Pallmeyer of weighing the evidence. She didn't weigh the evidence. There is not a scintilla of language in her opinion which suggests that she was making credibility determinations or anything like that. In fact,
the interpretation of the stalking horse memo seems a little bit hard to understand. Stalking horse, I think most people would concede, is a term that generally is intended to convey some deception to another party, and to talk of that as a prospective relationship. I'm not sure how that is a conclusion you would normally draw under in a summary judgment motion.
Well, I think stalking horse in the context of that memorandum, and I think the memorandum is quite clear, does not suggest an intent to deceive at all. But even if you put that spin on it, the thing that is missing is there is nothing in that memo that suggests that they're talking about Pacific Care's negotiations with Omnicare or anything that was going on at that time. There is every indication in that memo that what they were talking about is, what are we going to do with RX Solutions after the merger closes? Now, it's important to understand here that RX Solutions was a PBM, and most health plans don't have in-house PBMs. United actually had an in-house PBM a number of years ago, but they spun that off, and they were using Walgreens as their PBM, their agent, to negotiate these deals. And Pacific Care had its own PBM, RX Solutions, and there was a lot of concern about what is going to happen to that PBM after the merger closes. And what that memo discusses very, very clearly is that United has three options after the merger closes. United could keep RX Solutions and use RX Solutions to negotiate all of its deals. It could spin RX Solutions off, or it could adopt a mixed strategy. And that's where the concept of stalking horse came up. The mixed strategy was use RX Solutions as a stalking horse to make sure that we get the best deal from the vendors that we're dealing with, because if those vendors know that we have the option of going in-house, then they'll have an incentive to offer us the best deal. There's nothing wrong with that. I think the memo quite clearly relates to after the merger. The memo actually, there were many iterations of the memo, and the memo was actually used after the merger.
You can come up with a benign interpretation, but the term stalking horse carries some. How about the timing, the instructions not to tell Omnicare that we're going to challenge our agreement that we signed previously. What's the benign interpretation of those instructions to Walgreens?
Well, the benign interpretation was that they were studying the issue. This whole issue of whether these 18 patient protections were lawful or not lawful is a very, very complicated issue. After having lived with this case for a long time, it's an incredibly complicated issue, and they were consulting with outside counsel, they were consulting with Walgreens people, and it just took a while to come up with their analysis. And if this conspiracy was going on, if they had the ace in the hole of just joining the PacifiCare deal, why would they even bother to raise these issues with Omnicare? They didn't raise the issues, as Mr. Kurzweil said, they didn't raise the issues until after Omnicare signed the PacifiCare deal. So if the fix was in, why didn't United at that point simply say, oh, well, this is great, we don't have to worry about these 18 patient provisions, we can just join in the PacifiCare deal? I think the fact that they undertook an effort to renegotiate that deal after the PacifiCare deal was signed actually cuts our way. It cuts against an inference of conspiracy. And it's perfectly consistent with independent conduct. And if you have a fact, look, almost any fact, almost anything that happens could be consistent with an inference of conspiracy or innocent conduct. You can always figure out a negative spin to put on anything. But the law on the subject is very clear. Where you have a fact that gives rise to competing inferences, and one of those inferences may be consistent with conspiracy, but the other equally plausible inference is consistent with independent conduct, you must decide that case in favor of the defendant. A tie goes to the defendant. The law is very clear on that. We made that point very clearly in our brief, and Omnicare doesn't dispute that point, at least as far as I'm aware. Let me talk a little bit more about the due diligence process, which came up in Mr. Kurzweil's argument. One of the things that happened, and again, these are all undisputed facts, but what happened is United and PacifiCare had a meeting, and they talked about their Part D plans. And you have to have these kinds of discussions if you're going to engage in due diligence, just as you wouldn't buy a house without checking out the house and maybe getting it appraised and inspecting the house. You wouldn't buy a company for billions of dollars without finding out some information about the company, including some confidential information. And I think the law is pretty clear that there's nothing wrong with that. And so the parties had a discussion about the Part D program, and United was concerned that PacifiCare didn't know what it was doing. And Tom Paul wrote a memo expressing those concerns, and we discussed that memo in our brief, and it's in our supplemental appendix at page 1632. And he said, yeah, I'm really worried about what these guys are doing. We have to find out more. And so they came up with a list of questions. They vetted those questions with their antitrust lawyers and PacifiCare's antitrust lawyers, and the answers, the lawyers said, no problem, go ahead. The answers came back, and two facts were disclosed that Omnicare takes issue with. One was this AWP minus 16%. Now, that wasn't the price of that was being offered to Omnicare. That didn't have anything to do with Omnicare. What it was the standard opening offer that PacifiCare was going to make to all the pharmacies that it dealt with, not simply Omnicare and the institutional pharmacies that represent 5% of their business, but the retail pharmacies that represent 95% of their business. The other fact that came up was this clause in the agreement that would permit PacifiCare to add plans to its agreement without Omnicare's consent. That's part of its standard form agreement. And that information was also shared. Again, there's ample justification for looking at that information. It was cleared by the lawyers. You have to know what you're going to get yourself into. Is it consistent with, or does it tend to exclude the possibility of, or an inference of independent action? Absolutely not. Does it demonstrate that there was something conspiratorial or fishy going on here? Absolutely not. And in fact, during the negotiations between PacifiCare and Omnicare, and the parties were having an argument about whose standard form contract was going to be used, PacifiCare agreed to go through the Omnicare contract and identify those provisions in the Omnicare contract that it was willing to accept. And one of the provisions it identified that it was willing to accept is the provision that would require Omnicare's consent to add plans to the PacifiCare contract. So if these guys are conspiring, they're doing a really bad job of it because they were willing to accept a provision that would have prevented them from switching the United plans to the PacifiCare contract. Now,
that's not part of PacifiCare's standard contract, though. That was something they agreed to accept, is that right?
That's something they were prepared to offer to accept in the Omnicare contract. One of the things you heard during Mr. Kurzweil's argument was that, well, United had PacifiCare's back. United could have added PacifiCare to the United contract anytime it wanted to. That's actually not true. The contract that United signed was Omnicare's standard form contract, and that contract requires Omnicare's consent. So PacifiCare in July of 2005 was willing to agree to that provision. Now, in their reply brief, Omnicare says, well, that was never communicated to us. It was never communicated to them because PacifiCare created this document. They called it a crosswalk, and they said, we're prepared to send this document to you. And Omnicare said, don't bother. We won't consider it. But the important point is PacifiCare was willing to do it, and that is completely inconsistent with any inference of conspiracy.
Doesn't Professor Coates say that disclosures you mentioned a few minutes ago were really extraordinary for that type of merger, that this was really out of the ordinary?
I don't think he goes quite that far, and in any event, if that's his opinion, that's his opinion. I mean, these disclosures, A, were very general. It's a standard form contract. What we're talking about is exchanging a template. And parties exchange templates all the time in the due diligence process.
But not the negotiated prices, though.
Well, this was not a negotiated price that was disclosed. This was basically PacifiCare's target price. The reason it became the negotiated price in Omnicare's case is Omnicare didn't bother to negotiate. They just accepted the standard form. And again, the law is very clear. Even if you disclose a pricing term, even if you exchange pricing information, even if I were to say to all of the people in this room, this is what my hourly rate is, that doesn't violate the law. Information exchange is exchange of price information can be pro-competitive, not necessarily anti-competitive. And there's a case right on point, the Supreme Court's decision in U.S. Gypsum. And typically what you have to have in a situation where you have an information exchange like that, pricing information, for example, is you have to have something else. You need plus factors, and the typical plus factors are parallel conduct. This is why lawyers always advise their clients, well, don't discuss prices with your competitors. It's not because it's unlawful to discuss prices, but if you discuss the prices and then you have parallel conduct, similar price movements, then that might be sufficient to permit a jury to infer a conspiracy. But you don't have anything remotely resembling that here. In fact, on the undisputed facts, you have exactly the opposite. Now, Mr. Kurzweil made a big point of the analysis of their expert in which he concluded that AWP minus 16% was a below-market price. In any situation, first of all, some price is going to be the best price. Somebody is, if you have a range of prices, somebody is going to get the best deal. And you would expect in a situation where an offer is made and no effort is made to negotiate the price, as was the case here, then that entity is, in fact, going to get the best deal, and that's exactly what happened. There were three other plans that got similar deals, and Omnicare attempts to explain that away by saying, well, those are small plans. In fact, in their brief, they make a very telling admission. What they say is, well, those are small plans, and they were so small, it wasn't worth it to spend the time negotiating with them. Aha! That's what happens when you don't negotiate. What you end up with is something like AWP minus 16%. That's what happened with the small plans where they didn't negotiate. That's what happened with PacifiCare where they didn't negotiate.
Is your argument really that their whole theory of liability fails? Or is it, I mean, I know you're arguing that the summary judgment materials support the conclusions as to the facts alleged that But isn't your more basic argument that the whole theory that this constitutes an antitrust violation fails?
Is this
antitrust injury that we're talking about here?
Well, you know, the parties briefed antitrust injury, and the court didn't reach that. But I think one key point here that I think is perhaps more important than almost any other is that at the time this alleged conspiracy supposedly affected Omnicare, United and PacifiCare were not in competition with each other. United had already signed a contract. The sine qua non of any Section 1 violation is a contract combination or conspiracy that restrains trade, that lessens competition. And there couldn't have been any lessening of competition at the time this deal was signed because Omnicare and PacifiCare were not in competition. Omnicare had already reached this deal. I mean, what they're saying at bottom is, there was some tacit understanding here or some sort of agreement or wink and nod that PacifiCare would try to go out and negotiate the best deal that it could. Well, isn't that exactly what you would expect? I mean, if you're merging with somebody and they're out in the marketplace engaged in very important transactions, you don't want them to throw the game. You don't want them to take a dive and enter into a bad contract. You would expect them to try to negotiate the best deal they could get. They had a duty to their shareholders to try to negotiate the best deal they could get. And all they did was they sent their standard form contract to Omnicare, and Omnicare signed it. It's almost as if they're saying, well, when Omnicare said they were willing to sign the contract, PacifiCare should have said, wait a second, you don't want to sign this contract. The contract is too good for us. Obviously that doesn't happen in the real world. Omnicare is a multi-billion dollar company. It's a very sophisticated company. They have lots of lawyers. Obviously they must have been aware that there was this provision in the contract that would permit United to switch its plans over to the PacifiCare contract. All you have to do is read the contract and understand that. And I think one of you pointed out during Mr. Kurzweil's argument, under those circumstances where it's a much better price and there's a provision that permits you to take advantage of that price, what do you expect? I mean, isn't that exactly what you would expect to happen? And that's exactly what did happen here. And there's nothing about the facts in this case that suggests that there was any conspiracy or violation of the antitrust laws going on. Now, I see my white light is on, and I've made most of my key points. And I think unless the panel has questions, I'll sit down and save you some time.
Thank you, counsel.
Omnicare tried to negotiate a contract. The record is clear on that. Fever of Pacific Air testified that they weren't going to negotiate. They were going to give them a take it or leave it. They weren't coming back to Omnicare under any circumstances. They negotiated like crazy. June, then the merger comes in. At that point, Pacific Air says, forget it, we're breaking off negotiations. This provision that they supposedly were willing to give to Omnicare was drafted before the merger, was never communicated to Omnicare. The first any of us ever heard of it was during discovery in this litigation. The fact is that Omnicare tried to negotiate and finally went and said, give me your best offer. Pacific Air came back and said, basically, take it or leave it, it's AWP minus 16. Now, my adversary said that if United had changed its behavior after getting Pacific Air's pricing information, we would have a case. That's precisely what happened. What happened was that the only motivation, the only reason for sending the October 31 email, which encouraged Omnicare to sign the Pacific Air contract, was because United at that point, having gotten the request from Omnicare, knew what the pricing that Pacific Air had in mind was, and if they weren't conspiring in response to that October email, they simply would have said, we have no idea what Pacific Air is going to be doing. In fact, parties before a merger are competitors. The law so states. There's no exception that you're no longer competing. As a matter of simple antitrust law, until the merger closes, you are competitors. You can conspire, and you present yourself to the world as separate entities. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Chris. Our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.